This episode of Beyond the Uniform is sponsored by Audible.com, which is offering a free audiobook of your choice to Beyond the Uniform listeners. If you go to beyondtheuniform.io/books, not only will you find a link to get your free audiobook, but you'll also find book recommendations I've had from every single listener on the show. There are so many resources there. And, you know, for myself, I listen to audiobooks when I'm driving, when I'm biking, indoors, not outdoors. When I'm doing my trainer indoors, it is a great way to use what's called net time, no extra time, to learn about something, to get inspired, and to improve your own knowledge database. So check that out at beyondtheuniform.io/books. We're grateful for their sponsorship. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help military veterans succeed in their civilian career. I do that by interviewing military veterans to learn about their career choice, what they do, how they got there, and advice for other veterans seeking to do the same. Today's episode number 255 with Mitchell Howie.
What I tell younger folks is if they want to get out and be their own boss, and they recognize that you don't have a ceiling on what you can earn, but you also don't have a floor. But if you're independent minded and you don't want to answer to anybody but yourself, then starting your own business and being an entrepreneur is absolutely the right way to go.
Well, Mitchell went from an Air Force JAG officer to starting his own company. In this interview, we talk about starting your own business, in this case, a law practice, and how important it is to have sufficient savings or supplemental income in order to do so. In starting his own law practice, Mitchell had to network and sell himself a lot, and he gives practical advice for veterans on how to approach this. If you're interested in either entrepreneurship or the legal field, this is a terrific interview for you. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you will find show notes with links to every resource we discuss. You'll also find information about Beyond the Uniform's coaching program, which connects you with subsidized professional, executive, and career coaches to help you figure out your next career move. And a special thanks to Jameel Martin, who wrote on iTunes in a review, "Awesome content for active duty looking to get exposed to the civilian marketplace before becoming a civilian." Jameel, thank you for your review and for all of you who have left positive reviews on iTunes. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Mitchell. Well, joining me today in Huntsville, Alabama, my guest is Mitchell John Howie. Mitchell, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
So for listeners, I wanted to give quick background. Mitchell is the owner of the law offices of Mitchell J. Howie. He's been recognized as one of the top 100 trial lawyers and top 40 under 40 by the National Trial Lawyers. He is also ranked as one of the top 10 under 40 in criminal law by the National Academy of Criminal Defense. He served in the Air Force on active duty as a judge advocate general for over 4 years and currently serves in the reserves. He's also worked in the Texas House of Representatives and has served as a special assistant to the U.S. Attorney's Office. So, Mitchell, maybe to start things off, any additions or changes to that intro?
No, that's a pretty broad overview of my experience, and it actually makes me sound pretty good, so I like it.
Awesome. Well, maybe to start things off, and for listeners, I'll add in the show notes, we have had a couple guests on the show who are lawyers, but none who are trial lawyers. And so maybe to start things off, could you talk about your transition from active duty? And in doing that, if you could also maybe break down some general fields lawyers can enter into and why you chose to stay in the realm of trial law.
Absolutely. So when I was in, let me back up a little bit to why I went into the military in the first place. So when I was in law school, I didn't really know what kind of practice I wanted to have. I thought that I wanted to do transactional law and review contracts and that sort of thing. But I had a small interest in litigation. So that led me into the military because going in as a JAG, you're literally doing everything under the sun, administrative law, litigation, contracts. You are a utility person around the legal office and you're rotated through all those different sections. So that overarching view of I didn't know what I wanted to do when I was in law school, but I knew I wanted to serve in some capacity. That led me to the military. And so then once I was in the military, I realized that transactional law and reviewing contracts and staying inside of one room all day as you review thousands and thousands of pages, that didn't really line up with my sort of personality. And I realized I much rather would be inside a courtroom fighting a battle with the other side through litigation. So the different areas of law that you can practice in civilian world or the military is criminal defense, family law, wills and estates, personal injury law. And then I decided to stay more in the criminal law and family law arenas because those are the true areas where you get to litigate and get into the courtroom a lot. So that's what I've built most of my practice around.
And as you departed active duty, how did you consider that decision about staying in the reserves?
The job that I was offered when I was up for reassignment by my former boss was senior trial counsel to litigate all the serious felonies throughout the Air Force. So you basically travel around and litigate cases. That was a dream job when I went into the military after about a year in and realized I like litigation. But after having a wife and kid, being on the road 180 days out of the year didn't sound so hot to my wife. And that was the job that was on the table. My wife was prior military. She had enlisted right out of high school. She was pretty much done being active duty and having the moves, you know, the required moves every 2 or 3 years. So it was a good compromise getting out. I could still serve in the reserves, but we weren't going to be subject to the rigors of active duty and moving the kids around every 2 to 3 years. So it was more a compromise. I wanted to continue to serve, and my wife was ready to get off active duty, which of course turned out to be great for business and the family and all of that.
And you're an interesting blend because you're, you know, from an external standpoint, you seem like a blend of both entrepreneur and lawyer. Could you share a little bit more about what it was like for you starting your own law practice? And in particular, any advice you would give to listeners who are considering starting their own law practice or own business?
Yes, sir. I mentor a lot of younger JAGs when I go on for active duty. I do about a month out of the year as a Category B IMA. So what I tell younger folks is if they want to get out and be their own boss, and they recognize that you don't have a ceiling on what you can earn, but you also don't have a floor. But if you're independent-minded and you don't want to answer to anybody but yourself, then starting your own business and being an entrepreneur is absolutely the right way to go. The cautionary and the conservative analysis and advice I always give is you got to at least have a year to 2 years of savings for you to be able to live on, ideally, before you leave the security of a, you know, first and 15th monthly paycheck from the military. I was fortunate in that my wife was, at the time we were leaving active duty, she was full-time with IBM, and she was going to be able to cover the family as I built my business up. But you really either need a second income, need to be independently wealthy while you are getting out and building your clientele and getting your ducks in a row. So you have to have that. That's the buyer beware sort of advice that I give to younger JAGs. And typically they understand that and follow it.
I think that's such great advice. And it's not something I hear enough is that, you know, like you said, like if you have a spouse supporting you or if you have a lot of money, and by that, I love that time frame, 2 years worth of ability to feed yourself and have some money to spend on the business. And I think a lot of people underestimate that. It seems like a lot of times when I talk to people, they expect 2 or 3 months, which seems like a dramatic undercut, one eighth of what they actually need to get there.
Yeah, I think the conservative estimate is 2 years. I think you can be, if you take the steps that you need to take prior to transitioning when you're, you know, 6 months to a year out on the military, of your military commitment ending, if you start establishing a web presence prior to leaving active duty, of course, following all the ethics rules that you need to follow. But if you lay that groundwork, I think a year can work. But of course, it depends on what market you're going to and, you know, what connections you have in the area that you are ultimately moving your practice to. And that's I'm speaking from a lawyer perspective, but I think that applies to any entrepreneur leaving the military and any veteran who has a skill and they want to apply it to the outside and start their own business or practice in their chosen field. I think if you lay that groundwork while you're still in, to the extent that you can, because active duty life is busy, but you can do certain things, you know, in your spare time and weekends and stuff like that, that sets you up for success.
What for during those first, let's say, 2 years of getting this fledgling company off the ground, what did your life look like? And in particular, how did you get those first couple clients through the door?
Sure. So I was fortunate when we were deciding to go, my wife and I were deciding to leave the military, I personally was pushing for Austin because I had worked in the Texas House of Representatives. I had an agreement with my old boss, who's now the mayor of Houston now, but at the time he was still serving in the state capitol, for me to have not a limited income, but an okay income, a job waiting for me as chief of staff for him. And then on my own time, evenings, weekends, he was going to give me some time off to build up my own practice as I still continued to work for him as chief of staff. So professionally, that's where I wanted to go to Austin. And then I went to school in Austin, and Austin is absolutely a phenomenal town, and I would love to live there, or at least have a summer home or fall home for football games at some point there. So I had pushed for that. I wasn't smart enough to get my wife out to Austin. She had only been to San Antonio, and her memory of San Antonio was from basic, and she didn't have good recollection or fond memories of that time. So, but we did come down and visit my family here in Huntsville, and my uncle had been a practicing attorney. He does mostly civil law and bankruptcy stuff here in Huntsville, and he offered me rent-free 2 years, and then he would throw me clients that he didn't have time to deal with or, you know, kind of work together on some cases. So that was the professional option and offer I had here. And then with my mom and my grandma and my whole family being here and my wife being reminded of Germany here in Huntsville, Huntsville won out. So then I came here, and as I was building up a practice, the things that you need to do or any lawyer needs to do, you need to get on the court-appointed list for your jurisdiction. That's basically free clients because you don't have to advertise. You just do appointed work. It's at a discounted rate, but making $70 an hour when I didn't have any steady flow of income leaving the military, $70 an hour, if you do 40 hours a week at that rate, you're making $140,000. So that's not bad for lawyers that are just starting out. Now, of course, you don't get 40 hours a week with appointed clients, but so the first thing is you got to get on the appointed list, be it federal or state or whatever your practice is going to be in, if you're doing criminal defense. And then it's just about establishing a web presence and networking and getting in with anybody and everybody who can get you to your ideal client, and then hopefully getting your name out there and getting the phone to start ringing.
That's something that's come up that a lot of the guests on the show have had difficulty with at first, that thought of networking, of putting yourself out there, of promoting yourself, of selling yourself? I mean, usually it comes up in the context of an interview. I'm interviewing for a job. I need to talk about what I've done in the past, how I can really do well in this job. But your case is even more extreme in that you're really directly advocating for yourself. You're saying, I'm guessing you're saying something to the extent of, I can represent you, I can do this for you, I can keep you safe, I can act on your behalf. And I'm just curious if you have any advice to listeners about how to approach networking or how to approach selling yourself as part of whatever they're doing.
Sure. And, you know, nobody likes a self-promoter, and especially coming from the military, it's hard to promote yourself. But as a business person and as an entrepreneur, you just have to understand that if you have a vision of what you want to do and how you can help people, you need to make those people feel comfortable in your ability to do what you want for them and the service that you can provide to them. So, I mean, really, you just have to get out there and be yourself and talk to the various pools of folks that you can talk to. And then the lifeblood of any business, and it's been this way for a while, it's just moved online, is, you know, referrals from past clients. So once you're able to get that base of people that you've helped and you've done a good job for and you've worked your tail off for, and they're happy with the results that you have given. So bottom line, I mean, don't look at it, and I think this is for all the folks that are coming out of the military, don't look at it as self-promotion. You're just serving yourself, and it's a selfish interest kind of thing. Look at it as, I need to build my business, but the reason I want to build my business is because I want to help people who are accused of crimes wrongfully. I want to help people get through a divorce, that one of the hardest times in their lives. So that's kind of how military folks and veterans, I think that's the best way to approach networking as you're establishing yourself. Because nobody, I was nervous before you called me. You know, an interview, it obviously makes most people, you know, palms get sweaty, you get that butterfly feeling, you're like, what am I going to talk about? And when you own your own business, you're constantly interviewing and constantly putting your best foot forward to ensure folks know that, you know, you'll take care of them, provided they hire you and trust you with the responsibility of representing them in my business. So it's hard for many. You just got to get over it and say that the interest is building your business and helping people. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And another thing that comes to mind is, usually when I interview military veteran entrepreneurs, 99% of the time, it's someone who is, they serve in the military, and then they start a business that's completely different than what they did in the military. And you're a little bit different in that, you know, you did, I imagine there's a lot more overlap, significantly more overlap than most of the people I've interviewed. And I'm curious, like, what was the, given that the essence of what you're selling is what you did in the military, like the product in your case is the same skill set you built up in the military, what have you found most difficult about either practicing law as a civilian or running your own business?
The most difficult aspect of running your own business. Of course, starting out, you're petrified that you're not going to get clients, that you're not going to be able to generate the income for your family, especially if you have a family like me, that you're going to be able to provide that same kind of lifestyle that you did while you were active duty. So I think, honestly, the hardest part is just starting out. And then once you have that steady flow of clients and you've built up a good revenue stream, then it's just about perfecting your craft. And when, at least in the law business, you always feel like, well, I don't know if my current client base is going to continue on, because you think something's going to happen. I mean, that's just that's the military mindset. You're planning ahead. So I guess the uncertainty of owning your own business, even after you've been established, I've been full-time now, once I got off military active duty in 2009. So I've almost 10 years I've been running my practice, but I still at times think, well, am I doing everything right? Am I going to continue to grow? Am I going to continue to have the same revenue stream? That kind of fear and uncertainty of the unknown, because you don't know for sure that the phone will continue to ring. So you're always constantly doing things to make sure that you're serving your clients and getting the reviews that you need to ensure, you know, more people call you for your services in the future. So I guess that answers your question. I'm not sure.
Absolutely. And could you also, I'm thinking of listeners who are interested in either entrepreneurship or in the legal field, could you walk us through what your life looks like now? Like, what's a typical day look like? What sort of activities are you doing?
Absolutely. So always responding to email. I mean, right now I have 60 unread. I'm obsessively compulsive about getting my inbox down to, you know, close to zero as I can, because I don't want people waiting on me for a response. And that's one of the big things that I think other lawyers fail at. They fail to communicate effectively with their clients. And as long as you get folks a timely response, then I think clients are satisfied. But that becomes difficult when you are in a litigated trial and you're not looking at email, because every waking minute is spent on strategizing for that case, in family law, reviewing documents, and preparing your witnesses and all of that. In criminal law, it's preparing a strategy, looking at the law and analyzing the facts versus the law, and trying to come up with a theory that you believe, you know, a jury of 12 folks will believe, so that your guy or girl walks, or you get a lesser offer than what they're currently charged with. So email is a constant. And then I'm in court all the time, and then meeting with clients. So that's where the bulk of my time goes, meeting with clients, being at court, preparing for court, and answering emails and calls and, you know, new client consults. I think today we have 4 new client consults, and that's in addition to 5 calls scheduled with previous clients who have questions about their case. So, you know, nonstop client communication is key in my business, and I'm sure that applies to other sectors as well.
And when you're talking about preparing for cases, I envision you just must be reading and writing a ton. Is that like what that preparation looks like?
Yes. Well, it depends on which case you're preparing for, and I have a diverse practice, but mainly I focus on family law and criminal defense. So with family law, you are reviewing bank statements, and, you know, if you have a guy who, here's a case that I just had last week. So a guy wasn't paying my client, a female, any alimony, or she hadn't been paid the attorney's fees that she was ordered to be paid, and like $24,000 that he depleted from the marital estate when they were married. And this is a military guy. So I've had to first get the documents that we needed to prove that he has the ability to pay these $24,000. So then you're looking over the last 3 years of his bank statements, and you're analyzing, oh, here's a big expense. It's a $3,000 cash withdrawal. Oh, what is this regular monthly payment of $1,500 to this company? So you're analyzing all of those bank statements line by line in any family law case to either prove that you're client is entitled to the alimony and that the guy has the ability to pay it, because this is a contempt action. So that's one of the factors that must be proven. Or you're analyzing it to show that your guy can't pay alimony and doesn't have the ability to pay. So there's a lot of reading. It's very document heavy in family law. in criminal defense, you're mainly reading past decisions. You're looking at precedent and then analyzing the statute and applying the facts of your case to the statute and lining up the elements to see if the prosecution can prove their case. And then there's a whole lot of plea bargaining and negotiating with criminal defense. So you're always talking with prosecutors and asking them, you know, what can we do to either keep this guy's record clean or reduce it and minimize the time that the guy is spending in jail. And, you know, the vast majority of criminal cases settle because folks don't want to end up in jail and the prosecution is not sure they can get a conviction. So there's incentive on both sides to settle with respect to criminal law. But yes, you're reading, you're writing, you're analyzing statutes and past cases, and you're talking with your clients, witnesses, and the opposing counsel all the time.
And you also, you dabbled in politics for a little while. I'm just kind of curious what you would want listeners to know about that experience, any advice that you learned from that, and is there, do you see a future of yourself entering back into politics?
So on the question, am I going to enter back? Not if I want to continue on in my marriage. My wife is absolutely opposed to me getting back into running for office. We've joked that maybe when the kids are in college and out of the house and we're bored, then maybe she will allow me to run for office again. But so it won't be for a very long time because my youngest right now is about to turn 4. So we got a long time before I would even consider running again. The reason I wanted to do it is the same reason I went into the military. It's about service to something larger than yourself. And I wanted to serve the folks of Alabama in that capacity as state senator. Fortunately or unfortunately, however you look at it, we had a surprise third baby, and my wife was like, there's no way that you're going to be able to run your business, run for office, and devote the time that I need you at home. So we made that joint decision to pull out of that race, and no other races are anytime soon will occur. So.
Awesome. Well, I always like to leave the last question open-ended, which is you've provided a ton of value around law and around entrepreneurship, and I'm just curious, is there anything we haven't covered that you want to make sure your listeners know before we wrap up?
I mean, bottom line, when you're talking about starting your own business and getting out of the military, the main thing is to just go for it. If you're letting fear hold you back from going into the field that you want to go in after your military service, now I'm not telling folks to, you know, get out of the service and not serve your full 20 or 30 or however long you want to stay in the military. But if you're at a crossroads and you're thinking that you really want to establish yourself in the civilian world, go for it. Don't let anybody deter you. Go out and get what you want. And then you can still, like me, you can have the bridge back to the military service by continuing on in your reserve capacity. And then you have the opportunity to mentor young JAGs and stay in line with whatever values pushed you to serve and raise your right hand anyway. So I would say just go for it. I mean, that's general advice, but I think it certainly applies to all veterans, and I think that's who we're talking to in this interview. So
awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today. For listeners, you'll find a lot of resources in the show notes for this episode. You can also find Mitchell at his website, mitchellhowie.com. Thanks for joining me today.
Hey, thanks so much, Justin. Great talking with you.
Service.
Well, thank you so much for listening and for supporting Beyond the Uniform. Beyond the Uniform is produced and edited by me, Justin Asiri. Our staff is entirely part-time. They do this on nights and weekends out of the goodness of their hearts to give back to the military community. Our director of outreach is Steve Bain, who relentlessly books guests, finds sponsors, puts together our newsletter, and thousands of other critical tasks every single week, all behind the scenes to keep Beyond the Uniform running smoothly. Our editor is Kathleen Dillon, who listens to and transcribes every single episode to help out those who don't have the time to listen to the show. It has a major impact on our site's SEO value, which helps people find us through Google. Our data analytics and insights advisor is Andrew Woolridge, who pours over the data each and every month to help us better understand how to best serve the Beyond the Uniform audience. Our digital production work is done by Michael Cummings, who puts together custom artwork for every episode. If you're enjoying Beyond the Uniform, the best way to help us out is by telling your friends and fellow service members and veterans. iTunes reviews, believe it or not, have a big impact on getting the word out as well. So if you have a chance to leave a positive review, that is greatly appreciated. If you know of a business that would like to get their product or service in front of a military audience, we are always on the lookout for sponsors, which helps us subsidize the cost of putting this show together. And if you haven't yet signed up for our newsletter, you can do so at beyondtheuniform.io. We send out a newsletter twice a month, and it is a treasure trove of helpful information for your civilian career and transition. And be sure to check out our coaching program, where you can be connected with a subsidized professional, certified executive and career coach to help you in your career decision making. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back next week with more stories from military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.